it's way down there.
My name's Renee. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 3rd, 2000, and my home group is the Three Legacies group in Huntsville, Alabama. My sponsor read how it works. Did you notice how she kept looking down at me? I'm very grateful that she's here tonight, and I also have ladies here that I'm privileged to work with, and all you friends, and some other friends from Huntsville, and a wonderful voice of a husband there, Dirk. It's a privilege to be asked to speak, not my favorite thing to do, and I wore a skirt for Milton, so... I know I'm supposed to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. But I also like to turn to page 29, where it talks about the stories in the back of the book. Talks about each individual in the personal stories, describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. These give fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has actually happened in their lives. I hope tonight that you all see how I established my relationship with God and how he worked in my life and how he's still working in my life today. I'm so glad that Marion, fine, it's going back down. So when I bend up and down, I'm getting my water. Anyway, I'm so glad that Marion got to chair. I don't know, I imagine these girls do know, but I don't know if they know to the extent of the pain and the muck that I was in when I first started coming up here. And they welcomed me. And the girls from the Unity Group in Memphis are just incredible girls. I always had a sense of feeling a part of NAA, but I really felt a part of with them. They invited me to their morning meditations, and I don't know if they'll ever understand what that meant to me and what it continues to mean to me. This is a very special place for me, and I'll touch base on that a little bit later. Anyway, I was a very shy, spoiled girl from Kansas City. And I was spoiled in the fact that my husband had me breathing in deeply and breathing out, and I think I've hyperventilated, but my head, anyway. Anyway, well, hopefully I'll get over that soon. Let's see what God has in store here. Growing up, I had my mother and father, and my grandmother lived with us, and my two half-sisters from my mother and another marriage, and my other half-sister from my father and another marriage. My half-sisters were in their late teens, 16 to 18 years, and there I was, like 2-3 years old, and so everybody in the house gave me everything I wanted. And when I went out into the real world and you all didn't do the same, I had a big problem. But, you know, last time I spoke, I touched base on my father, and I didn't even know where it was coming from, but I guess I needed to hear it. My sister, the last time that I went back to Kansas City, she told me, she said, at about 5 years old, my father left. And she said, I never heard a little girl wail and cry like you did. And I laid in the threshold by the front door. And but that wasn't the only time he left. My parents got divorced, and then they got remarried and divorced again. So I got to go through that twice. And I was always a daddy's girl. He passed away from lung cancer when I was 20. He did get to walk me down the aisle of my first marriage. Anyway, I hope I don't say 100 times. He left, and my grandmother left, and my sisters got married, and so it ended up being just me and my mother. And my mother, she never drove, and I was always that, you know, fearful child, just like we all talk about, and didn't have any self-esteem. And it was even compounded when I had to drive around as a child in a cab. I would hide and duck down in the back seat, you know, so people wouldn't see us. Or me and Mom walking down the road, because we'd walk to wherever we had to go. And anyway, I was very grateful when I turned 16. And I never applied myself when I was a child academically. I've been that perfectionist from the very beginning, and if I applied myself and fell short, then there'd be a problem. So I just didn't apply myself, and I made bad grades all through school. I think the worst grade I ever made was a D-minus-minus. That teacher wanted to make sure I didn't get back in his class the next year, you know, so he just passed me. I started drinking when I was a junior in high school. No, I lied. I started drinking in junior high school, and I would take alcohol to school. And the funny thing was, is I would take it in perfume bottles. And I don't know why I thought it was any better to see somebody, a kid at the locker, chugging out of a perfume bottle than it would be to chug out of a Jim Beam bottle. But so I would chug out of this perfume bottle in between classes. I also, we would go to the movies on the weekends. The parents would pick us up and take us to the movies. And before the parents would pick us up, I would get under the sink and I would chug straight out of the bottle, which is basically how I drank the rest of my drinking career. I never liked the taste of alcohol. I would chug it and then chase it with a Pepsi. I wasn't for the sipping. And so, you know, junior high went along, and I drank every chance I could get. When I got to high school, one night in particular really, several nights stand out, but one night in particular really stands out. I was a sophomore, and there were several kids from my junior high school that went to my high school, and most all the kids from my junior high school went to this other high school. So I went to this new high school with a bunch of kids that I didn't know. So the alcohol really came in handy to help me fit in. And there was one night I had this new boyfriend, and I drank, I guess it was probably a half to three quarters of a fifth of vodka. And the kids were worried. They threw me in the shower because they said I wasn't breathing. And come to find out, I was also, I guess what they call today, date raped or taken advantage of. It's what alcohol always did to me, placed me in that position. And from there, you know, I still didn't even try in school. I was all about the party. I started dating another guy. He was the quarterback of the football team. And he drank like I did. It was about as crazy as I was. And it was a pretty sick relationship. We would get into fights. I jabbed him one time with a thermometer, and mercury went flying everywhere, and he threw his mother's sofa on top of me, and you know, I got tired of fighting, so, oh my, I got tired of fighting, and so I broke up with him. I thought, you know, I'll teach him a lesson, and he'll straighten out, and then we can get back together. Well, he got a little crazier. He would hang out outside of my house. See, my mother didn't drive, so I would take her to work in the morning at 6. I'd come back home, get ready for school, and he'd hang outside of my house, and he'd attack me. One time he abducted me. I was going to the movies with my girlfriends, and he grabbed me, and he threw me in his car, and he took me where we used to park. And he raped me. And he said that he wasn't going to be around very long, and he wanted me to have his child. I won't go into all the details, but anyway, the police came to my house. I finally talked him into taking me back. And I lied, and I told him that he didn't do anything. And then I received a letter a few days later in my mailbox. He hand-delivered it. And he said in the letter, basically the gist of it was that I had driven him crazy, and he wanted me to come to his house at 4:30 to the basement to see what I had done. And I called my mom, and she says, "You're not going down there." She said, "When I get home from work, you can call his mother." So that's what we did. And I called down there, and a man answered, and I asked for his mother, and he said, "She can't come to the phone right now." And I said, "Okay, well, this is Renee. If you would tell her that I called," and he said, "Hold on." She got on the phone, and she was crying, and she said, "Renee, honey, Brett's dead." And he had taken a shotgun and put it to his stomach. So, not only was I shy and spoiled, but I wore the victim role very well, and guilt-ridden, and all those things that seemed to do me justice in my drinking. And it was real hard to go back to school because I kept seeing letter jackets everywhere. And so I did that COE cooperative. Anyway, you go and to school half a day, and then you go to work half a day. And so I did that until I graduated. And I thought, I need to go away to college. You know, all this time I had been seeing different counselors here and there. There was a lot of deaths in my family around that time. My brother-in-law had killed himself, and my cousin had killed himself, and my father died, and my grandmother died, and it was all within a few months. And so, you know, if you'd had that happen to you, you'd drink like I do, too. Anyway, so I thought that I would see a few counselors. Maybe they could help me, but I was never, ever honest with anybody about my drinking. And I don't believe that anybody can help me as long as I'm drinking. But so I have this wild idea I'm going to go away to college. And I go to college, and, you know, I try to do like the other kids. I try to get up, and I try to go to class, and I try to study, but I can't. I got to drink. And at first, you know, I was mingling well with the kids, and I went to Fort Lauderdale on spring break with some girls I met, and it ended up getting to the point where I wouldn't get up to go to class, and those girls didn't even want to be around me. And it was Greek week. I was at the Sigma Chi house, and we were having a party. And I don't remember much, but I remember that I jabbed some scissors into my arm. And I was up in the bathroom with all these kids at this party. So what do? They grab me, they put me in the station wagon, they drive me to the hospital, and there I stayed behind this mesh lock, barbed wire stuff, and that started the beginning of being locked up in the nut house. I don't know what to call it. But I had to stay there until my mother and sister could come down and get me. And I went back home, and I said, you know, I'm going back to school. Where do I get these ideas? So I go back to school, and I have this big bandage on my arm, and then I get a letter from the dean that she wants to see me, and I'm like, oh, heck no. So I go home, and that was the end of going away to school. I came back home, and I met a guy. I started working for a finance company, and we got married. And we were married for about 8 years. And he was the manager of a finance company, and I had got a job in electronics. And I was in sales, and he was in finance, and we weren't doing too bad for our early 20s. I got pregnant, and at 8 months pregnant, went to the doctor. I had to start going every week or something, and the doctor said, we need to do an ultrasound. And so they did, and he told me that there was no signs of life. So I had to carry that baby for 2 more weeks because I had to go into labor. He said you needed to abort it on your own. So that's what I did. And, you know, I said to myself, the reason why I tell you that is because some amends I made that are important to me about some things I did down the road. But the reason why I tell you that is because I did not drink the whole time I was pregnant. And so you know what I said to myself after I lost that child? Didn't matter. So the drinking was really on. And you know, we just moved on from there. I kept drinking. This is important. I need to say this. I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous. But an outside issue came into play. And this is important because it was short-lived, but it took me down fast. And it was the first time I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went with my mother and my aunt and my cousin. I come from a long line of recovering alcoholics as well as alcoholics. My uncle was sober 35 years when he died, and he died in 1978, so he got sober in the 40s. My grandfather died with 22 years of sobriety, and my cousin has over 25 years right now. I remember going to the AA hall. I have family photos are at the AA hall. I have pictures of my aunt and uncle on the back wall as AA, you know, and so, you know, that tells me, that gave me hope. Just like it says in the book that, you know, since it happened with us, it can happen with you too, you know. And so my mother and my aunt and my cousin took me to AA, and this was in 1987. And of course, because it was an outside issue that got me there in the first place, I couldn't relate. Alcohol had not caused me the consequences yet. Alcohol was still my best friend. And so I had to go back out for another 13 years to be convinced and beat down enough. And so I did. I ended up getting a divorce from that husband. And I moved out on my own. And I was, by this time I was in outside sales, selling electronic components. And I covered 3.5 states. So I was traveling a lot, and I was hitting hotel bars, and I was talking to men that I didn't know, and it wasn't good. It was, like I said, about 9 or 10 years, and I went, my company was, that I worked for at the time, was based out of Montreal, Canada, and I went up to the corporate office. I met a gentleman from Huntsville, Alabama. So we hooked up, and that's how I ended up moving to Huntsville. I transferred with my company, ended up being his boss, but you know, I have to also tell you that he was married, and he had 2 beautiful daughters. And he got divorced, and then we got married. And, you know, me living in Kansas City and him living in Huntsville, I don't know that he really got the true picture of who Renee really was. But he did quickly after we got married. It was a bad situation, and it was bad for those 2 girls. My mother had ended up getting sick about this time. She came down with stomach cancer. So I went up there and I sold all her stuff, sold the house that I was raised in, that she earned on her own, and I moved her to Huntsville. She had to take nutrition through a portacath, and I would have to hook her up to that every night and unhook her every morning. And I would drink as soon as I got off work, as much and as hard as I could before I would hook her up. And then I would unhook her in a fog the next morning. And God forbid, she did have some bad nights that she needed to get a hold of me, and I was passed out. And I'll talk more about that. She ended up passing away, and went back, flew her back to Kansas City to be buried. And during the visitation, you know what I did? My girlfriends from Kansas City picked me up, went out in the parking lot, and they had vodka, and I drank. And went back in to the funeral home, because that's what I do. Especially in a time like that. I went back home, and at this time, my husband, that husband, gave me an ultimatum. He said, you know, and I heard the whole time Mom lived with me, and my cousins would come down and see me, and my mother, you know, Renee, you need to do something about your drinking. I would get drunk, and I would chew them all out, or I would get on the phone and call people and chew them out, and you know, I'd go to work some days, and my boss would call me in, and he'd say, "Oh, so you were busy on the phone last night." Well, I had called him and told him how he wasn't running the office right, Tim. And I would try to hide the phone before I would get drunk, so I wouldn't. But I would find it and call people, and then when I came to the next morning, I couldn't find the phone. So my husband gave me an ultimatum. He said, "You need to get sober." So I made an appointment with a counselor. And normally, you know, when you go to the doctor, you take off a couple hours, and you go back to work. I took the whole day off. I don't know why. I had a plan. I was going to the doctor, I was going to Walmart, and I was going to go home and get drunk. Well, I went to the doctor, and my husband was waiting on the side of the street to make sure I got there, and he followed me in, and I had to fill out a form, you know, because I was a new patient. And about a third of the way down, it says, "Do you drink alcohol, and how much?" And I said to myself, and I believe this is a turning point for me, I said to myself, if I answer this honestly, my life is not going to be the same again. And so I answered it honestly. And I turned the paper in. And he called me back, and he's reading down, and he gets to that point of, "Do you drink alcohol? How much?" And he went, "Do you want to get sober?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I do." He said, "Is someone with you?" And I said, "Yes, my husband." He said, "Just a minute." So he went out and he got him and he says, "Okay, here's the deal. You drink entirely too much to detox on your own." And he picked up the phone and he called Bradford and they had a bed. And in 2 hours, I was out there. And it taught me where to go. And so I came here with you all. And, you know, I started going to meetings. And this red-haired lady kept coming up to me, and she'd say, "Darling, you got a sponsor yet?" And I'd say, "No." And the next time she'd see me, she'd say, "Darling, you got a sponsor yet?" And I finally said, "Would you be my sponsor?" And she was known as the Nazi sponsor. And I'm so grateful. You know, I hear people today, and this is just what I needed. I hear people today say, you know, if they'd have told me what I had to do, or if they'd have been strict with me, I'd have been out the door. Well, you know, I had to be there a half an hour before the meeting started. If I wasn't, I was late. I had to wear my sobriety. It just seems different today than when I was in, and it's not been that long ago. So anyway, we worked through the steps, and you know, it's amazing to me, the roommate that I had when I was in rehab We got really close really quick, and our 30-day trip, we had planned to go together. Well, she had gotten into a wreck the night before, and she ended up hurting herself really bad, and she ended up being in the intensive care unit where my mother was, where I spent 30 days. And it's kind of like I needed to go back through that, or I was going back through that. I don't know how to explain that, but anyway, I got the 30-day chip and I gave it to her family. And I said, I'm not going to go there. Moving on, it's amazing what has happened since I came into this program. When I started making amends, my sponsor, I had my 8-step list, and I took it to her, and she said, "Okay, Renee, which one's the hardest one to make?" And I pointed, and it was my ex-husband that was married when him and I got together. We used to go to the functions of the girls playing sports, and she would come up to me, and she would call me names, and she would kick me, and she would hit me. Of course, me being the good victim that I am. God, can you imagine what she did to me? And never mind what I did to her. So I told my sponsor, I said, that one's the hardest one. And I was afraid to meet her. She's a country girl. I was afraid she'd have a gun. I didn't know, but I did what my sponsor had said. I called her, I made an appointment, and I met her at the Cracker Barrel where a bunch of people would be around. And I asked her to come into my car, and I told her what I had practiced with my sponsor. I told her the journey that I was on, and that what I had done to her, I was wrong. And was there anything I could do to try to set that right or make it up to her? And she said, there's nothing you can do to make it up to me except to continue on your journey. And if there's anything I can do to help you, let me know. So, that just blew me away. I would have never figured that in a million years. Another thing that happened, you know, when things like this happen, I like to write them down so that when I'm on that pity pot, I can get on that bondage of self. I can look back and I can see how God's worked in my life. Another thing that happened, when Mom passed away, there was a small insurance policy that I divided between my three sisters, and my third, which I showed Dirk the receipt of it, was the exact amount I owed Bradford after the insurance paid. Another thing I did, my sponsor said that I needed to write a letter to Brett, the one that killed himself, and go to the local cemetery and read it to a grave that felt right. So I go to our local cemetery, and instead of pulling up into the drive, I park on the side of the street and I jump the wall. It's the way I do things. And the first grave I came to was the same last name as Brett, and this man had been a preacher. So I read it there. I got divorced from the second husband. It never should have been. I was drunk. It was just not meant to be. And I kept doing what I was supposed to do. And I had already known Dirk, But we started dating, and we ended up getting married about a year and a half later. And next week will be our 5-year anniversary. It's been a hard road. I just don't do relationships well. I am learning. You know, there's so many places in the big book that sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I'm sometimes slowly. And I have learned. There was a point. I was in sales for so long, and I decided that I got tired of being in sales. I got tired of manipulating, trying to get the almighty dollar, and I wanted to do something to help somebody. So I applied to radiology school. About 200 people, young girls went out for it, and they accepted me, one of 12. And I graduated. I went through the whole thing. It was really tough. You know, I had never applied myself in school before. This time I was going to apply myself, and this time I was going to finish something. And I graduated with a 93.3 grade point average at a Price. All my focus was on that. When my focus is on something other than my higher power, it becomes my higher power, and I get very sick. And subsequently, I went to a renewal center. And it was really a dark, dark time. That's when I started coming up here. I went for 4 weeks, and it was a group of doctors out of Kansas. They are world renowned, and it's only 4 doctors. And how I ended up there, I don't know. But I will tell you, cutting this short, I will tell you that I learned a lot about myself, and that the last day that I sat in group listening to everybody share, it occurred to me, this is 12-step stuff. I need to go home, and I need to get to work. So I went home. Not to mention they had diagnosed me with everything, and they had me on all kinds of stuff. That would come later. I started seeing a counselor in Huntsville. We talked to the doctors in Kansas on a conference call. I asked them to get me off this medicine, and I asked them to give me a return to work. And they said they couldn't do either. They were afraid that I was a risk to myself, and they wouldn't put their licenses on the line. I, again, was powerless. I ended up going through this counselor to a psychiatrist in Kansas, in Huntsville, and she helped me get off this medication, which I can say I'm not on anything today, but that's just for me. I'm not saying whether anybody needs anything or they don't, but I redoubled my efforts in the programs of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there was times that my sponsor, what really saved my butt when I got back was my sponsor. Thank God. She pointed out to me that she just was at odds what to do. She said, "Renee, I pray for you." She said, "I just break down and cry," she says, "because I just don't know what else to do." Finally, one day, she just got that stiff upper back, and she said, "Renee, you had better get somebody to work with, and you'd better do it now." So I went to the local halfway house, like that day, and I got 2 people to sponsor, and I swear to God, that saved my life. Prior to that, prior to like 7 years, I wasn't really sponsoring anybody. I mean, I would try, but they wouldn't stay, or I just didn't do it for whatever reason, and it saved my life. You know, I have been picking and choosing in this program, I believe, even though I redoubled my efforts, which steps I'm really going to focus on and which ones I'm just kind of not going to. And that's been real clear to me lately, that I can't just pick and choose which ones I'm going to do and which ones I'm not going to do. There are 12 steps, and I needed to hear myself say that. In this book, what really stands out to me lately is on page 18, when he's talking about the ex-problem drinker can win the confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Well, he says, what really stood out to me was, who is properly armed with facts about himself. And then, there's another spot. But my favorite part in the book, I want to close with this, because around my house these days, it's just so neat. We were talking in the meeting last night here about how I'll just tell you, I was talking about how I was and how I am now. I can't imagine. Some people may say, I'm going to go to AA so that I can quit drinking and then I can go and do my life. Well, I can't imagine go and do my life, because this is my life. Being around all you guys, hanging out with all you guys, you are my family, you are my friends, and you are my lifeline. And so I would have some girls come over, and we would do a big book study on Wednesday night. And one night, for instance, I was reading this, and I just started crying. Page 152, you are going to meet these new friends in your own community, near you. Alcoholics are dying helplessly, like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. These are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. And that's what I think it's all about. It wasn't until I learned to give of myself that I got out of myself. And I just want to thank Milton for asking me to speak and getting to discover more about myself. So thank you all.